Poker.
America, welcome to America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney. It's Memorial Day weekend. It's a time to celebrate family, friends, and remember. Bow your heads for at least 20 seconds or keep your heads up, I don't care. But just remember the people who gave their lives to keep this country free and to support the life that we hold so dear. Living in a free country and having free speech allows me to do what I do, allows all of you to have the opinions that you have, and to have the kind of taste you have. You know, you live in a communist country. They're going to tell you what to watch, what to do, and what you should be thinking because they want to be in your thoughts. You know, the state-run, I think state-run media is a very dangerous thing. That's why the AP, the phone records, pouring over the phone records, Department of Justice to the Associated Press, I think was just so horrific to me. And we'll see what the outcome ultimately is of that. But you got to have... whether you hate the press, you have to have a free press or you don't have America, because that means you have force-fed information coming your way, and that is a dangerous thing. The president decided that he was going to get in the middle of it and give a big speech on terrorism and talk about things like Gitmo, talk about the framework for getting rid of Guantanamo, and focusing also on drones. He talked about the threats that come from Al-Qaeda affiliates, talks about the extremist groups, talked about homegrown terrorists. He had a rather long address that was put forth to what he calls engage Congress on aspects of national security. And he was calling the speech the National Defense University speech, to continue to work, to try to work on Congress and to try to be more transparent in the use of drones, there's that word, and to look at some of the threats that are facing us. So it was interesting, some of the things that he had to say, kind of piggybacking on the State of the Union address earlier in the year when he said that his administration works, he called it, tirelessly to forge a legal and policy framework to guide the counterterrorism efforts, except for when it comes to pouring through phone records and some other things that are right there on the cut line, I would have to say. Coming up in this hour of America Tonight, some things that I think you'll enjoy in case you missed them. Mark Waite. You might not know the name. He's a two-time national cycling champ. He was on the 1988 U.S. cycling team. He shares some thoughts about Lance Armstrong. What a big fall from grace at the beginning of the year for Armstrong. Not that people didn't have their suspicions, but when he comes clean on Oprah Winfrey's show, now 5 months later, he's being sued in every single direction by anyone who can think of a reason to sue Lance Armstrong, because he's worth, or was worth, something like $500 million. So Waite talks about cycling. He talks about now how businesses are getting together in cycling. So you have executives or just people that work for the company where they'll have a bike outing. I think is such a great idea, provided you're not riding on the road. Do you ever have that in your neighborhood where you have bikers backed up and you're trying to make a turn? And to me, I don't see open road biking unless there's a big wide bike lane. One, because people are texting or not paying attention. We have so many distracted drivers, it's scary. Then we're also going to have a conversation with Russ Riddle. He helped me with some intellectual property, and this is kind of the way of the future, you know. You have an idea, you're having some beers with your buddy, you're in the garage. He said, that's a great idea. My buddy Dan in Texas said this is something he was going to make. So I take that idea from him, I become a millionaire. Whew, I have no recourse because I didn't put any paperwork together. And since the country is made up of 90% small businesses, you got to think there's a lot of ideas floating around out there. And people used to push that aside, the intellectual property, and that aspect of the law, but it's not that expensive. And I think that if somebody has a company, that's something that they have to copyright certain things, easy for me to say, versus letting them just hang out there and blow in the wind. Also, rounding things out, Leah Hollis joins us, and, you know, Rutgers couldn't have been more in the news. Remember the crazy hoops coach that ultimately got fired, and then the athletic director who decided he initially, before the world knew, he was just suspending him without pay for a couple of days, and that wasn't enough. So he also lost his job. And Leah played for Rutgers and also wrote a book about the bully. It's called The Bully in the Ivory Tower. And she talks about how tough it is in academics, and then you mix in sports, how tough it is in universities, what often happens to people and where they get caught, and then thoughts, of course, on Rutgers and specifically what happened at Rutgers. And this was something that looked like it was going to go away, but it didn't go away and became a huge, huge story. And speaking of a huge story, while we're remembering people who gave their lives to protect our lives here in the United States and our way of life, you have to feel that this is a tough weekend for the people in Oklahoma, in Moore, Oklahoma, because they just buried and are still burying 24 people and too many kids, 7 kids. The fact that you had 10% of that town that was in an area that they could get away from the tornadoes, I think, is so frightening. Whatever the cost is, that's something to save up for, to get one of those storm shelters. And they say you can get one between $6,000 and $8,000, which that's a lot of cash to shell out, but I'm sure some of the people that didn't have them wished they had them, no matter how much it costs. I hear that they're really selling like hotcakes, sadly, afterwards. And in an area like Moore, you don't have that many basements. It's very rare to have basements. So I think newer houses, people are trying to get basements built because there would be an area where you could go. The city of Moore was the epicenter of that EF5 tornado last Monday, that just decimated neighborhoods in the Oklahoma City area, and it left, as I said, 24 people dead that they're now burying. And every time you look at that video, you understand, oh, yeah, how are you surviving that? You're lucky to be walking above the ground after looking at how big that tornado was and how many lives it affected because of the wide swath, almost 2 miles wide. It went for 17 to 20 miles, so you can imagine how much debris is still, even with massive cleanups and help and everything else. You know, this third strike was just the one that pushed people over the edge, I think, in Moore. They had one in 1999 that was awful, and they had one in 2003. So whenever the tornado strikes, people say that they're going to build homes and safe rooms and all of that, and they vow. But this time around, I think people are going to make that come true for fear that they'll end up in another one of those situations. Hang on, we're back with more in just a second. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Gold isn't for you? Ted Anderson, president of Midas Resources, one of the world's premier gold and precious metal investing firms.
I get it.
You wouldn't buy gold if you believed that the government is doing a great job, that the Fed will stop handing out trillions of dollars like bailout candy, that Social Security would be there for you. That's not what's happening. You might even pass on gold if the stimulus package wouldn't fuel inflation, or that the dollar wouldn't lose value, or that your retirement would be secure. If all looks rosy to you, then now is not the time to buy gold. For the realists, there have never been more sobering reasons to diversify with gold. Since 2001, the U.S. dollar index has tanked 30%, while gold has risen 300%. Right now, savvy investors are adding gold to their portfolios. You should, too. Find out what they know. Call us, and I'll send you 10 reasons why gold will do very well, free. 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Her hands are never cold. She's got better days aside. She'll turn the music on you. You won't have to think twice.
All right, it's only been a couple of months since Oprah Winfrey interviewed Lance Armstrong, and now all kinds of lawsuits are being leveled at Armstrong. And, of course, he was the beacon forever for Americans in racing with all the Tour de France's and whatnot and overcoming his battle with cancer. So he is definitely linked with cycling in the U.S., and that was considered to be a very good thing. More people jumped on bikes, and I think that's frankly true because they got excited about Armstrong. They started to watch the tour. They got, you know, more interested in riding in their local areas or got serious about it. I mean, even some serious riding. He was this guy that came seemingly to most people in the beginning out of nowhere and got a lot of attention for a sport that wasn't necessarily that popular. Then he confesses to doping. But how much damage has he heaped on the world of cycling? And it's hard to quantify this because it depends on who you talk to. And I've really gotten hooked into cycling, and I sort of liked it before. But I have to say Armstrong really pulled me into it. So two-time national champion cyclist Mark Waite says there's still hope for the struggling sport, and he has a really cool thing that he's doing. He's now, as a member of the 1988 U.S. Olympic cycling team, he is now a business exec and the founder of Cycling CEO, a network of business execs who share that passion for jumping on the bike. Thanks so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it. We probably pulled you off your bike, Mark, somewhere.
A little late for it, Kate, but thanks for having me.
So let's go back to you in cycling. What was it that hooked you on the sport and got you to the point where, I mean, hey, a two-time national cycling champ, part of the U.S. team, that's huge. People covet those spots. So you were at really the top of the heap. How did you get interested in the first place?
I actually was a runner. I came out of high school as a distance runner, and I went to West Point, and I ran my first 2 years there, and I got three stress fractures in 2 years. I was in my first 2 years at the academy, and I realized that I needed to find something else. And I had this competitive streak in me and just was looking for something different. Kind of was my nature back then. I people will say, why did you study nuclear engineering? It was like, well, because nobody else did it. It was different. Same reason I took up cycling. It was like something I hadn't done before, and I thought I'd give it a try. And, you know, 4 years later, I'm like, wow, you know, I made pretty good progress in a short period of time.
Yeah. Boy, great progress in a short period of time. And when you were cycling, was there lots of conversations about doping? Were people talking about that?
No, in through the 80s, it was an interesting, a good question and an interesting path, because in the 80s, there really wasn't a lot. The story that came out in the mid to late 80s was around, what the U.S. team did at the 84 Olympics around, the whole blood doping story, which was proven to be true, but at that time it wasn't illegal. That was the most you ever heard about it. And then you'd hear about, kind of rumors with the European professionals, they were doing stuff, but more around like amphetamines and things like that, that they would take, they would take to keep themselves going day in and day out in 3 week races like the Tour de France. But nothing really that, come out in the last 10 years or so around with the use of steroids and testosterone and EPO and human growth hormones and, all this calf blood stuff, all these other derivatives that exist out there. This stuff didn't exist then. It's just kind of like, your typical, illegal drugs that people would use.
Yeah. The question I was asking at the top of this is, if people think of Armstrong now with doping and with the disgrace of the sport, can the sport bounce back? Is cycling, damaged for good?
No, and that's a great question. I look at it and say there's two aspects to this. One is there's the aspect of where Lance was at and the professional level. And there's a lot that needs to be done, because those riders and those racers are still being eyed with suspicion. And until riders like Lance, and then there's a big trial going on in Spain, or it's called Operation Puerto. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you recall it, but
yes.
A few years ago they busted this doctor, and he had dozens upon dozens of professional athletes, not just cyclists, but tennis players, footballers/soccer players, other athletes that were custom clients of his as well. And, that trial has just gone to trial in Spain, and they're not going after the athletes. They're actually going after the doctor and his associates. Whether the athletes get punished or not, who knows? So you've got this air of suspicion about the professional athletes, and are they really clean? Is the sport cleaning up? Cycling has made efforts to move forward in that direction, to clean up the sport with biological passports, tougher testing standards. Unfortunately, it's kind of like we take two steps forward and one step back. Now, and that's one level, and that's kind of, that's the bigger part of the business of cycling, around sponsorship and getting corporations into the sport. Because we're seeing companies leave the sport because of all the doping scandal, and they feel like, hey, we're getting screwed in the process. We're putting money into supporting this sport, believing in these athletes, and then we find out that they're winning by illegal means. I had a conversation with a company here in California yesterday that was heavily involved in the Tour of California. And then when all the news broke about Lance, they said, enough, we're not doing it anymore. So that's unfortunate that that part of it's going to take a long time, I believe, to come back. But the second part of this, which I think is still healthy and thriving, is on the local level, and it's with, it's on the local, the slash grassroots level, where I think it's still going strong, and where people are doing it because they love to ride, they see it as a great activity for socializing with other people, as a great way to spend quality time with family, or just as a way to stay healthy without all the pounding that you get from running. And so I think it's still, it's the growth has plateaued in terms of recreational cycling. But I think, you know, there's some young riders coming up that are making a name for themselves in Europe on the pro scene that hopefully will continue and will have similar success and be able to take cycling, you know, back up and into another level again.
Yeah. Just a couple of minutes left. Tell me about what you're doing, trying to get businesses to jump on board. And instead of going to golf or do something like that, how about teams of business people jumping on bikes?
Right. So there's a lot of talk in the wellness, corporate wellness around fitness activities. And there's a lot of metrics that exist to show the value of getting employees away from their desk and into some sort of fitness activity. And as, you know, cycling has a unique characteristic to it in that you get a group of 5 or 10 people together out on a ride, guess what they're going to do? They're going to socialize. They're going to talk. They're going to be interact with each other. All these things that don't exist in the office because technology has made it really easy for us to sit behind, you know, our computer screen in our cubicle or in our office and interact via email and instant messaging. So it forces you to be social with your colleagues. It brings you ultimately brings an organization, creates more of a team environment, creates more camaraderie, and at the same time, you're promoting a healthy lifestyle with your employees. And companies will benefit from this because, you know, not just kind of the, everybody says lower health care costs, lower absenteeism, workers' comp, et cetera, but they're also going to benefit longer term because you're going to have a workforce that is more likely to stay engaged and be more focused at work and put forth that little extra effort. Because people are the biggest expense of a company. And if you can invest in programs that will keep your employees engaged, keep them healthy, retain them, and also make it easier to attract new employees, you know, those are all wins for companies.
No,
and
absolutely.
On top of that is the new Affordable Care Act is providing incentives for companies to continue to invest in wellness.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at it and saying, let's help you business leaders who do love to cycle. Let's bring a program into your company and let's help your employees and your company at the same time.
Yeah, check out Mark's stuff at cyclingceo.com. Mark, thanks for coming on America Tonight.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Gardeners, here comes another growing season, but don't use last year's soil. Maximize yields in your survival garden with EM1 from Terraganics. EM1 is an organic soil conditioner, fertilizer amendment, and compost accelerant that provides a broad spectrum of beneficial microorganisms, enzymes, trace minerals, vitamins, and various organic acids. EM1 helps regulate the soil's pH level and its soil microbes, improving moisture retention and drought tolerance. Remember last year's dry conditions? EM1 from Terraganics is safe, chemical-free, and certified for use on all organic farms. It improves plant quality, size, color, flavor, and gives up to 20% more nutrient value in fruits and vegetables and greatly increases shelf life. And EM1 is so simple to use, just mix with water and apply. This year, prepare your crisis garden for maximum yields with EM1 from Terraganics.com. Order now at TerraGanix.com or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Terraganics, life's getting better.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
It's time to get real.
It's time to prepare.
Economic collapse.
Social unrest.
Natural disasters.
Government takeover.
UN takeover.
Are you ready?
Ready?
Ready? get ready at the Social Prepper Trade Show in Dalton, Georgia,
June 6th, 7th, and 8th.
3 massive days to learn self-reliance and emergency preparedness. Exhibitors ranging from survival, solar, power, food, protection, guns, ammo, disaster preparation products, hunting, and much more. Seminars by Dr. Wallach, Robert Henry, Raymond Blake Hogshead, Trish Deer, Sandy Hall, Rick Austin, Survivor Jane, and more of our nation's experts on survival and preparedness.
Don't miss the Social Prepper Trade Show.
June 6th through 8th, Dalton, Georgia. For discount tickets, prize raffle, and info, go to socialprepper.com.
Enter code GCN for 50% online ticket discount purchase.
The Social Prepper Trade Show.
Presented in part by GCN.
There's been a disaster, and most of you don't even realize the serious concern for all of us. Alex Jones has warned you for years to get the most important supply you can for your liberty, freedom, and security, and that's food. We thought the danger was drought, or food diverted to our gas tanks, or food so expensive that we'd all need financial assistance to afford it, or our food being sold to other countries. But here's the most effective way you'll lose your liberty and security without a fight: government regulation. The do-it-yourself public services of many LDS Mormon food storage canneries can no longer be provided. This, along with the recent private gardening and farming regulations and additional government control of food supplies and resources, says food is the ultimate priority. eFoods Direct will provide free shipping on all food orders until further notice. Call 800-409-5633 or on the web eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
What's safer and cheaper than prescription drugs?
Glad you asked. The answer is Renovation Teas. Herbal remedies are much safer and much cheaper than prescription drugs. Taste great, and most importantly, herbal teas are effective and non-addictive. Renovation Tea is especially unique, and here's why. We spent years researching herbs and their beneficial properties. Renovation Teas uses only 100% organic, fair trade herbs. Our teas are blended towards specific ailments and health conditions, such as diabetes, blood pressure, anxiety, libido, detox, and much more. All Renovation Teas are formulated and hand-filled in Arkansas. Take care of yourself naturally, the way Mother Nature intended. Order Renovation Teas at renovationtea.com or call 870-784-3121. That's 870-784-3121. Renovation Teas. Renovate your health one bag at a time.
A lot here on America Tonight. My pal, my lawyer, and it's not my brother, just so you're thinking that, Russ Riddle, I love his last name, the Riddler. There's so many nicknames that come out of that. He is a brilliant lawyer, business guy, intellectual property. I mean, heck, I think anything he picked up, he could be an expert in it. But I think it would be fun to talk to him. I thought it would be fun to have him on the show anyway, because so many people, so many of you out there are entrepreneurs, and I'm sure you get stuck in negotiating situations. And what happens, for example, when you open a business with a friend? You think it's all kosher, and then suddenly it goes all wrong. What do you do? Russ, thanks for coming on America Tonight.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
Yeah. I'm not going to send this to my brother Patrick, by the way, because I said you were my lawyer, not him.
Well, I can be your local lawyer.
Local lawyer. I love that. Let's talk about that, because this is happening a lot with people. You know, you want to help your friends, and next thing you know, you have an idea, and it could be in any business. You know, you could be a home builder. You could be somebody who's making websites. There's all kinds of possibilities, because after all, 90% of the business in America is a small business, and the definition of a small business is 500 employees or less, and a lot of times those businesses start from scratch. If you get involved with your friend, is it a good idea to have a piece of paper between you? Because, you know, no one wants to do that.
Absolutely. You know, you think it's your friend, maybe even your best friend, maybe it's a relative, but having a piece of paper, it doesn't make anything bulletproof, of course, but it does kind of keep you on the same page, no pun intended. when you get into a disagreement of sorts, which we all do with in all of our relationships, it gives you something that you can at least pull out and just say, let's just sit back, take a step back and look, what did we agree upon? What are these things? And it helps in most cases.
And what's that called when you have the paper? Is there a certain kind of agreement? Is there a name to that?
Well, it's a contract of some sort, depending upon what you're involved in. Mm. It could be a services agreement. It could be a partnership agreement. It could be anything, really. But, mostly people refer to them as either agreements or contracts.
Agreements or contracts. Intellectual property is big, especially with the Wild Wild West. That's what I call the Internet. Because of the fact, it's so true, because of the fact that everybody's coming up with clever things and then they fall into this idea and then they've got this special blog and then it creates some other kind of buzz and it becomes an even bigger thing and leads to a different company. I mean, everything is moving so quickly. I think intellectual property law is going to be one of the biggest practices in the near future. I mean, obviously there's so many other forms of the law, but because I think more people are going to start to have problems with this, do you foresee something like that happening in the future?
Well, yeah, I think you're right. You know, any company, whether it's just a startup or a multimillion dollar company, aside from your people, your greatest asset is your intellectual property. And by that, I mean copyrights, trademarks, and even patents. But most people don't have to deal with patents, which is a complicated process to say the least, but every company, no matter the size, has intellectual property, things that are copyright protected, things that need to be trademarked and properly protected. And most startups or small companies don't necessarily know that. They don't necessarily take the steps necessary to do that.
Yeah. In looking at the types of intellectual property, somebody listening to us now at some of the nooks and crannies that we're on, it could be somebody listening in New York or New Jersey or somebody listening in South Carolina. What's the definition of intellectual property?
Intellectual property, in a nutshell, is an intangible property right. It's like if you own your house, that's very tangible. But if you own copyright in a book or a manual or the content of a website, that's a little more intangible, esoteric. Basically, copyright takes care of things that you create, that you originally create, and it springs into being kind of like a jack-in-the-box whenever it's fixed in a tangible medium of expression. What that means is when ink is down on paper, or when you've saved something to hard drive or a thumb drive or something like that. It's a tangible medium of expression that it's been fixed in. And copyright sounds singular, but it's really a bundle of rights, including replication, distribution, derivative works, right to display, right to perform, and all of those things are the bundle called copyright. So that generally protects content. Now, trademark, on the other hand, it protects phrases, titles, brand names. Brands go all the way back to the days that you mentioned, the Wild Wild West. The origin of brand does go back to cattle brands. And that's what we talk about typically when we're talking about trademarks. It is either a single word, a symbol, a logo, a short phrase. None of those things are protectable under the copyright laws, but very much protected under trademark law. And to create a trademark, you begin using it, and you continue to use it in the marketplace. And to get a registered trademark, of course, you have to apply with the United States Patent and Trademark Office.
Yeah. Good advice, too. And Russ gave you a great definition of that. You, at one point, were the lawyer for the purple dinosaur named Barney. Do you know that song, do you? It's not in your head. It's probably like a tape that plays in your head, I think, sometimes, right?
It is.
It's been a long time.
Out, but I'm not much of a singer, so I'll save your listeners. I did that for 7.5 years. I worked for, first it was Lyric Studios, and it was Barney and also Wishbone, the little Jack Russell Terrier that had a show on PBS. And then a British company named Hit Entertainment bought
Lyric Studios. So then we had just a stable of characters. We still had Barney and Wishbone, but we also had Bob the Builder, Thomas the Tank Engine, Angelina Ballerina, and I could go on. It really was a stable of characters.
Yeah, Thomas the Tank. I watched Thomas the Tank with my nephew. Was that fun to do that? Because, boy, all of those characters really took off.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah, we had everything from the licenses ranging from diapers to all kinds of goods that you would see in the store. We even had children that unfortunately passed away. Their parents would ask for permission for putting Bonnie on the gravestone and just all sorts of licenses, because to those kids, Barney was really cool. Of course, Barney wasn't for adults, but he never was intended to be. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We did television shows. We had music and CDs. We had books. So basically all kinds of entertainment law and licensing. I really enjoyed it. And that's where I really did a lot of the copyrights and trademarks back then. And I have continued through the years doing that for new clients, but also people that used to work there that went on to other companies and other brands, they continue to use me as well. So it's a lot of fun.
Didn't you know when you became a lawyer that weren't you supposed to become one of those Washington hacks and go with your briefcase from Texas to Washington? I mean, everybody in Washington's a lawyer, Russ. You need to have a second career. I'll help you. Go. You got to change things in Washington. Did you think you were going to, that's always the thing. Somebody goes to law school, and like I said, there's so many different forms of law. Did you think you'd end up in this direction with the law?
You know, I really did. The stereotype, the lawyer, some of those things that you're mentioning just never did fit me. You know, the three-piece suit, the cufflinks, the fancy cars, you know, Rolex watches, Mont Blanc pens. You know, everybody has that image of attorneys, and there certainly are attorneys that go that route. But, yeah, a lot of people know me as the anomaly at law as opposed to attorney at law. And how that came about is through the years, many clients and friends have jokingly, but yet with some truth in it, said, you just don't come across as an attorney. And I thanked them. Some people might have taken that as a put down, or I took it as an absolute compliment. I'm not bashing attorneys at all, but certainly the stereotype is not a positive one, and I'm happy to be something other than that.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite, because sometimes I think there's, and it could even be a pro bono thing, do you have a favorite case you ever worked on that you were like, oh, I am so excited about how this worked out?
Well, I've had several. When I first started practicing law, I was practicing in a law firm in downtown Fort Worth that we represented media clients. And we had a 4.5-week trial down in Houston representing one of the network television stations there and one of their investigative reporters. It was a libel case where the plaintiff had said the broadcast, it was actually a series of broadcasts, had bankrupted them and just ruined their business. And we felt otherwise. And we could have settled the case. In fact, we made some inroads to that, but they were a little too greedy, if you will. And so we ended up going to trial, and we won that case, and they got zero. And it was a lot of fun because we were on the right side of the thing. They had done some things they shouldn't have done, not the best judgment in their business dealings. And we were simply reporting about it, and they took issue. So that was a lot of fun. It was a high-profile case in that region down in Houston. Another one that we had was a book author that he did a book review of another book that had to do with the Kennedy assassination. And then the book was actually written by one of the doctors who was at Parkland when Kennedy was brought in. And he wrote it from a conspiracy angle. And our client did a review blasting that. And the Dallas Morning News ran that book review. And so the Dallas Morning News got sued. Our client, the writer, got sued. And the other entities were sued as well. And that was a fun case because it was all about Kennedy. We're here in Dallas. We, you know, talked to several people that were involved, either as doctors and that sort of thing. So that was fun. And then, of course, all the Barney and entertainment law that you mentioned. Mm. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm still going.
Good for you. Anomaly at Law. I love it. Russ, thanks for stopping by on the show. Appreciate it. I think you shed some light on a few things that could help a few people. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Kate, for having me.
Thanks.
salt. A natural disaster strikes, and out goes your power. You risk losing stored food in electric freezers and refrigerators. Your options: lose all that expensive food and medication, fire up a noisy gasoline-powered generator, or switch now to a propane or natural gas-powered refrigerator from Ben's Discount Supply. Ben'sDiscountSupply.com has a complete line of propane-powered refrigerators. Freezers in sizes ranging from a small camper cooler size up to a whopping 21-cubic-foot refrigerator freezer or a 22-cubic-foot deep freezer. In stock and ready to ship anywhere. Ben'sDiscountSupply.com also stocks a full line of solar-powered appliances to get you completely off the grid. Check out Ben'sDiscountSupply.com or call 800-771-7702. That's 800-771-7702. Or click Ben'sDiscountSupply.com for camping, home, or bug-out location. Bank on Ben'sDiscountSupply.com.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, listen carefully. Sweeping changes to IRS policies will help more people than ever eliminate their tax debts once and for all. And now, thanks to Dan Pilla, you can get the tax help you need to end your tax nightmare.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I've helped thousands of people reduce or eliminate tax debts they couldn't pay. And after more than 30 years of experience dealing with the IRS, I can tell you there's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. With the IRS's new policies, it's easier than ever to put your tax debt behind you once and for all. Call now at 800-346-6829 to learn how I can help you. You know your IRS debt will not go away by itself, but you don't have to live in fear anymore. Call 800-346-6829. Learn how I can help you eliminate wage and bank levies, release tax liens, and negotiate a settlement with the IRS that will put your tax nightmare behind you forever. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. Or go to my website, taxhelponline.com. That's taxhelponline.com.
Move Over Organic, the Pureganic companion ebook and cookbook, sets a new standard for purity in our diet with a 100% toxin-free lifestyle. It's time for an American renaissance in health and quality of life. This book is loaded with simple methods to holistically eliminate disease, original recipes, a 30-day diet plan, and much more. Purchase now at PureGanicCompanion.com. The Pureganic Companion, the preventative maintenance manual for the human body.
We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Story a lot. I told you that what happened at Rutgers with the former head basketball coach for the men's team, Mike Rice, of course, getting bounced eventually, but it wasn't until everything was exposed about what he was doing at practices and whatnot. And as I mentioned, my cousin is the director of communications for Rutgers, and I have a lot of family members. My mother, father, and brother all went to the university, the Scarlet Knights, kind of like the Scarlet Letter, unfortunately, in the wings. And you can hear Dr. Leah Hollis. She's got a unique perspective on this situation, too, because she was an athlete there. She was a varsity collegiate athlete at Rutgers and also served as a director of academic support services. And she's got an interesting new book out, Bully in the Ivory Tower. Dr. Hollis, thanks for hopping on ATN.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And I trust you are well.
Yes, likewise.
There you go. So you probably were as stunned as the rest of us when you heard the story about Mike Rice. Were you surprised or no because of things you saw during your athletic experiences?
In my athletic experience, period, I was in athletic administration probably 8 years, two of which were at Rutgers. I was not surprised. Coaches sign contracts to win. And some of the drills you saw on the tape, they were very aggressive about, you know, coming at the players in the paint, that type of thing. The things he got in trouble for, of course, were kicking the balls and hitting the players and kicking them in the shins, that kind of stuff. Well, that's out of bounds. So, of course, I agree that shouldn't happen, but the aggressive style of practice, and that happens. And also, coaches win and they get radio contracts and TV contracts and shoe contracts and car allowances. They don't get points for being nice. They get points for winning championships. So I'm not surprised. I'm surprised that, oh, I hate to say it, I'm surprised he got caught. I'm surprised it took this long to bubble forward given the social media.
Right.
But I'm not surprised.
Do you think what, you know, remember he was suspended by the athletic director for 3 games, lost the pay for that with, you know, without pay. Do you think that the athletic director did the right thing? And, geez, why was he fired then? Only because all of a sudden it's revealed
well,
the things
the
that you said?
Well, the charge here is bullying and abusive behavior. Unless it was in Mike Rice's contract about what was out of bounds, bullying is still legal. Harassment and discrimination under Title VII and civil rights laws are illegal, but being a jerk is still legal. So did he have a questionable coaching style? Sure. Did legal counsel have a leg to stand on and say he's bullying the players? No. New Jersey's anti-bullying laws are only K through 12. Even the issue that happened with Tyler Clemente, you have so many connections at Rutgers, I'm sure you're familiar with that. That's a very sad story about the young man who was cyberbullied.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Robbie, the student who was charged, he got some time, but he got, I believe, 30 days. There's nothing on the books that protects people once they graduate from high school from bullying. So legal counsel really didn't have a leg to stand on.
Yeah. Do you think, you know, talking about the whole bullying thing, and it's interesting because New Jersey's law is really actually a pretty good law, but doesn't apply to, as you said, the athletics at the colleges.
K through 12.
Do you think that this is something that should be put in place?
Yes, and actually the state of New York is making a run for a healthy workplace bill that is going up, I believe, in the next 30 to 60 days. I just got notification of that today. New York would be the first state in the union to have a healthy workplace bill if they're successful this June. But they're the closest one. It's still legal to bully your staff.
Wow. And then they put that in place, and it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. In your book, you know, as I said, the title Bully in the Ivory Tower, you look at workplace bullying and at colleges and all that kind of stuff. I mean, how big is it? I mean, is it much bigger than we can imagine?
Yeah. The average rate is 37%. That's from NAMI study about from 2007. My study is showing 62% of respondents in higher education are facing workplace bullying. And it's typically at the entry level and the middle management level. The departments that are perceived to have the most bullying are executives, the academics, and the arts and athletics. For whatever aggressive behaviors, or those tend to be the power centers in the university. At least that's how the respondents perceive them. So, bullying in higher education, and I was saddened by it because I have over 20 years in higher ed, is much more extreme than in the general population.
Yeah. And your breakdown of that's interesting, the athletics, the arts, the academic. And do you think the academic is because they could sort of lord it over you? You want tenure and you've got to get there and you've killed yourself to get all these degrees and now all of a sudden there's a carrot somebody can dangle around you. That's it?
It's about tenure. You have tenure, you can beat up on whoever. Because you have tenure. But you can't discriminate if you have tenure. So the discrimination trumps tenure, but tenure trumps bullying. It's kind of like rock, paper, scissors, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So with tenure, you can do what you want with tenure. Yeah. So I'm not surprised the academic ranks happen.
Yeah. What would you like to see happen? Obviously, you talked about New York. I would imagine you'd be on board with that and would want to see that in other states. But what else do you think can be put into place now?
Right now, an institution, college, company, what have you, can have anti-bullying policies that are just as strong as their anti-retaliation, anti-harassment policies, and put them all together. And then you also have to enforce your policies. when you put those policies and weave them into somebody's performance appraisal, and you also do something called a 360 evaluation, where you evaluate your executives for their civility index, if you will, or how kind or supportive they are of their staff. Those are the kinds of things that were proven in my study that really helped to stamp out bullying. But the institution has its own policy. Okay, forget the rules. This is how we play in Rome. We're going to be civil to each other. And that can go a long way to eradicating the kind of stuff we saw happen with Mike Rice's group.
Yeah. Are there some universities that are particularly heinous about it, or there are some that are maybe a little better? You know, what about the Ivies versus the rest of the real world, the other colleges?
In the study, I did a cross section of 175 schools. I did the Ivies, I did the small public, the large private. I did historically black colleges, state institutions. Just a nice cross section. And all these, it all came back from everywhere. So I wouldn't say the type of school is more fussy. It really came down to the type of leader. If your leader's a bully, the staff underneath will adopt bullying behaviors. If your leader is a good person and is really about having a civil work environment, the people underneath him will follow suit. So this findings we're showing is pretty much about the leadership, not the type of school.
Yeah. And so imagine, you know, we're talking about academics and schools, and what about everybody else if we took all kinds of positions in the world? What do you think the number would be there for workplaces?
Well, the number that NAMI came up with, which was 37%, and they did a general study a couple years ago. I can imagine that companies that have more rigid power structures, I mean, academics has a power structure that has tenure in it. And that's a power galvanizing position. So I'm not surprised that bullying is higher. I didn't think it would be this much higher, but that it's higher. I would imagine you're going to see the same thing in, say, professional sports. Or you're going to find the same things in groups that have particularly galvanized power positions and where the person in power really has carte blanche to do whatever. And that's where I believe bullying would really take off, because the bully goes unchecked or doesn't have to be accountable to anybody. That's where it really thrives.
Yeah, interesting. It would be great to see that number flipped around. You wonder how many, and you were an athlete, and I think you can be motivated by someone who's tough on you, but if it's really, really bullying, don't you think that's kind of the opposite effect sometimes on a really good athlete?
Even 17, 18, 19-year-old kids, usually 18 and up. I was 17 when I went. I was a little younger, but the coach is your parent. Your coach has your stipend. Coach has your playing time. Your coach has everything you went to school for except the classes. So the chances of you reporting on an abusive parent is not real great. Just like the chances of you as a player reporting on an abusive coach is not real strong either. That's the guy who has your livelihood. You're not going to report on him. It's unlikely that a player will report on a coach.
Yeah, I agree, and that's probably one of the biggest problems for sure. Hopefully we've opened some eyes here on America Tonight. Dr. Leah Hollis, pick up the book, Bully in the Ivory Tower. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know we've got to find a way.
Introducing a 30-day emergency food supply for only $99. At 30dayfoodsupply.com, you can purchase Oregon Trail Foods' one-month supply of high-quality, nutritious, and healthy emergency meals for less than $100. These vegetarian meals are all natural, non-GMO, high in carbs and protein, and are packed with oxygen absorbers in Mylar pouches. They take up to 70% less space than number 10 cans, have a 20-year shelf life, and huge portions, over twice the serving size of some competitors' meals. Oregon Trail Foods and 30dayfoodsupply.com keep prices low by buying direct from producers in Oregon and then pass the savings on to you. Purchase a 30-day, 90-serving emergency food supply for only $99 this month, and $10 ships your entire order to the lower 48. Call 541-673-6666 or visit 30dayfoodsupply.com, where they make preparedness affordable. 30dayfoodsupply.com. Got it? Get it. Go to 30dayfoodsupply.com.